the humanitarian organizations from operating. It's also, of course, affecting the United Nations and the efforts to bring some kind of peace negotiations. So all these factors are extremely important in the situation in Yemen at the moment, which are all affected by basically by the new Trump policies since January.
We just have 30 seconds, then we're going to do a post show with you. But I wanted to ask, the U.S. says they're attacking Yemen because the Houthis are attacking ships in the Red Sea. Can you explain why they're doing this?
Well, number one, the Houthis have completely stopped attacking ships in the Red Sea after the Gaza, when the Gaza ceasefire started in January. And they were threatening to restart them, but they did not restart them. And the only things they've been attacking in the Red Sea in the last few weeks have been the U.S. Ship military targets that have been going there. Basically, the Houthis have been doing all whatever they have done in that sector, and as well as launching missiles and drones towards Israel, has been with the intention of assisting the Palestinian movement.
Helen Lackner, we want to thank you for being with us. I covered Yemen for half a century, author of Yemen in Crisis, The Road to War in Yemen, Poverty and Conflict, among many other books. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Hello, I'm Eugene Rashad. Join me every Saturday from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. for the best in jazz on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial.
But I dig, and I know you dig, because I got 4 requests for this thing already today. Strutting right there.
That was KBOO volunteer disc jockey George Page. Page has been playing jazz and popular black music on KBOO for the past 12 years.
What I do to the audience I draw, hopefully, is to please them with all types of black music. Mostly what you can't hear as a rule on larger black-oriented stations in L.A. or San Francisco. I play a lot of blues and a lot of jazz. All of it's black-oriented, but it's not the cuts you're going to hear on the other jazz shows. It's not the cuts you're going to hear on other stations, because other stations just don't play jazz and blues in a black vein the way I do here.
Welcome to Coast Range Radio. I'm Michael Gaskill. Biomass energy, that is, burning pelletized wood for electricity generation, is a classic false climate solution. It has been devastating forests and communities in the Southeast for years, and the biomass industry is dead set on expanding into the Pacific Northwest. We did a deep dive into biomass a couple years ago, and you can find that in the Coast Range Radio podcast feed. But with the Trump administration and congressional Republicans, along with some Democrats, attempting to gut protections for forests, now is a good time to learn from activists in the South and check in on the state of biomass here in the Northwest. So I'm joined today by two amazing guests, Dr. Treva Geer with the Dogwood Alliance and Brenna Bell of 350 PDX. As so often happens with great conversations like this one, I couldn't fit everything into one 30-minute radio show. So I'm trying something a little different today. You can find the second part of the interview on the Coast Range Radio podcast feed. And I really hope you'll listen to it. Part 2 gets into updates on federal policy and legislation, lessons we in the Northwest can learn from the multiracial environmental justice organizing that the Dogwood Alliance is engaged in, and why calling Senator Ron Wyden may be the most important thing you can do right now for our forests. Again, you can find that part 2 of the interview on Coast Range Radio on any podcast app, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. And while you're there, please consider leaving us a nice review and subscribing. My email is coastrangeradio@gmail.com. Reach out with questions, feedback, or just to say hi. Okay, Dr. Treva Geer and Brenna Bell, welcome to Coast Range Radio.
Thanks, Michael.
Yes, thank you. So glad to be here.
Dr. Geer, it is wonderful to meet you. And Brenna, it is always great to have you on. You're one of our Coast Range Radio all-stars, so thanks for coming back. There's a lot I want to get into today. And, you know, our listeners, most of them will be at least somewhat familiar with biomass. But let's do a quick, a dirty refresher. What is biomass? Why is it bad?
Well, I'll jump in and talk about, you know, how, biomass is bad because it's not clean, green, and it's not renewable energy. First of all, you know, what's happening with biomass is the harvesting of a forest, turning them into wood pellets, then, you know, sending them overseas to be burned in coal-fired power plants. However, each process of that is nasty and results in a great deal of pollution from the source location of, well, from the harvesting of the trees, from the actual act of logging to getting those logs and those trees to the locations in which they'll be turned into wood pellets. The massive amount of pollutants that are put into the communities and the nearby residents that live near these pellet plants, and then the actual shipping and the trucking of these pellets the shipping of them over into Europe and Asia and other places. So each part is a problem and produces a loss of pollutants. Furthermore, trees are supposed to be the solution for pollution. And it's a very inefficient source of energy. I'll leave it at that and let Brenna add anything.
Yeah, I found that when we start talking about wood pellet energy here on the West Coast, people all think about folks just using pellet stoves in their homes or things like that, like the small scale residential use of wood pellets for heating. But what Dr. Geer is explaining is something on a just massive scale that they've been dealing with in the U.S. Southeast for about the last decade, which is this just like huge industrial production of wood pellets to be burned for energy rather than heating, which makes it super inefficient. And the end result is energy that has more carbon output than burning coal. And so as this is new to the West Coast, or they want to be, I mean, they want to build 4 large processing and export facilities on the West Coast. We've been learning a lot from our allies in the Southeast who've been fighting this industry for the past decade.
And look, no offense if you have a wood pellet stove in your house, but if anybody has ever experienced that, they are inefficient in the home as well. And so on an industrial scale, I don't see any reason why they would be better. Also, you all didn't mention it, but they always cite these plants in like wealthy white neighborhoods in the South, right, Dr. Geer?
Well, of course not. I'm glad you brought that up. It's always communities that are already overburdened with pollution, communities, typically communities of color, typically communities that are in poverty, in neighborhoods and resident in cities that need economic progress. Mm-hmm. But instead of economic progress, you're not going to really get any jobs from it. Usually provides very few jobs. And it hasn't decreased the poverty level in most of these communities based on the research. We haven't seen the communities prosper better because the plants are there, but we have seen them be sicker.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. For folks that want to really dive into learning more about biomass, they can always go to your organization, Dr. Geer, the Dogwood Alliance. They can look up the Axe Drax campaign in the Pacific Northwest, and we'll talk more about where folks can go. But I also want to talk about the state of biomass campaigns across the country, give some updates on that, learn some lessons from the great work that you all are doing in the South. Before we do that, you all recently had a trip to Washington, D.C. that was set up, I believe, by the Rachel Carson Environmental Council. Could you just talk a little bit about that trip? It sounded from your blog post about it, Brenna, that it was a really useful and enriching trip. So
Yeah, it was. I don't get to the East Coast much. And when the Rachel Carson Council reached out and said they were doing a national wood pellet forum, and could I come talk about the things on, you know, all the four proposed plants on the West Coast, I was hesitant because Washington, D.C. is a long way away, and it was a day-long forum. But then when I heard that people, you know, awesome people like Dr. Gear and Dr. Martin and other people I just know from, you know, mostly Zoom meetings and their great work in the Southeast were going to be there, and that it was the Cherry Blossom Festival time, I'm like, okay, I'm going to go to Washington, D.C., and I'm so glad I did. It was so helpful to hear in person more stories about the sightings of these plants and more stories about the local impacts. And we spent a day on Capitol Hill lobbying together. And, you know, I was, you know, able to talk to representatives from the West Coast alongside these people who are in communities that are suffering, who could explain what it's like having wood pellet manufacturing in their communities to make the case for not bringing it here. But also, I'd like to hope that my presence there in trying to like keep the industry from expanding is also helpful to the fight nationally and globally. Like, this is something that I really don't want to just be a not in my backyard fight for us on the West Coast. Like, it would be great if we stop these export facilities on the West Coast. And since capitalism needs to grow, right, companies need to grow to succeed, maybe stopping those will help also stop the industry as a whole. I know it's already having trouble, like Enviva. I learned more about Enviva, which we don't have out here yet. They sound like a really bad neighbor. They're already having financial troubles. But and then on the Wood Pellet Forum the next day, again, was a great place to just meet people both nationally and internationally. People came over from England to talk about the work they're doing there to stop, especially Drax, from expanding, since they're the largest burner of wood in the world right now, and the largest carbon polluter in England, but get massive subsidies from their federal government for green energy. And so just having these conversations, it infused a lot more kind of vim and vigor into our fights out here on the West Coast, which seem a little far-flung.
Did you have anything to add, Dr. Gear?
No, Brenna summed it up very well. It was great to have her there, you know, to fight the expansion in the West. And so, yes, that summed everything up. And it was great to just be in collaboration with so many other advocates that are in community and fighting on both ends and internationally. So
you did a day of lobbying. How was the experience meeting with the congressional delegations?
Do you want to take that one, Treva, first? We met with different people.
Sure.
I'd love to hear.
Yeah.
What your experience was.
Yes. Well, we go probably a couple of times a year. And so some of our legislators, our congressmen and their staffers are more familiar with the issue than others. Then others have to be educated, and some who may not be as favorable. There were some interesting meetings that we had with folks who probably would be, you know, pro, let's cut the forest down. Let's do those things that timber is green. It is money. It is profit. They were not as accepting of what we had to say. And so we had to angle it more around, you know, change our conversation a bit and focus it on the fact that the economy is not really benefiting, you know, bringing them the message that benefits them best, but also making sure they understand this is not a profitable or sustainable industry that ultimately hurts people's health and hurts our environment, and actually we're not profiting as much as people think, not in communities.
I mean, that's such a good point about needing to shape the message based on the audience there. Brenna, how were the how was the Northwest congressional delegation receiving this?
Well, we didn't get to talk to many of them. Marie Glusenkamp-Perez from Southwest Washington, whose district the Longview export plant would be located, did not accept a meeting with us. And her staff person took the information and assured us that she has a long and close relationship with the timber industry. Somehow, I think, trying to make us feel better, but it didn't. So I think there's definitely work to be done on helping her understand that this is not an industry that we should be welcoming with long arms. arms, or like open arms, sorry, into Southwest Washington. The best reception was from Representative Maxine Dexter. She's new in Northern Oregon. And I knew that she was a doctor, but in the conversation that we had with her staff person, I found out that she's actually a pulmonologist, which, you know, folks who deal with the respiratory system. And I was with Dr. Crystal Martin, who comes from Gloucester, Mississippi, who is fighting very hard for like the literal life of her community. Because as she puts it, every child has asthma and every elder is on oxygen in Gloucester, which has a Drax wood pellet manufacturing plant right in the center of town. And that has happened since the plant came there. And her mom is sick. And so she moved back to Gloucester and has been devoting her time and life to really fighting that Drax plant. So having her be able to explain the respiratory impacts of the plant to Dexter's staff was really important. It was just a pleasure. I was also traveling with Portia Shepherd from Black Belt Women Rising in Alabama, who I think knows everyone in Congress, and was such a pleasure to be traveling with, and watching her speak truth to power was a lesson in community organizing that I really appreciated, because these people are, you know, they're speaking from this like direct lived experience, where we're speaking from like, oh, we don't want this thing to happen. And it's a different frame. Mm-hmm. And so it was very powerful having people share their experiences and their community's experiences.
Well, thank you both for that and for going up into the belly of the beast, so to speak. Looks like we have some unsurprisingly work to do with Representative Glusenkamp Perez, but I think that goes to changing the message, having the right messenger. She's one of those people that could and should be an ally, along with my representative, Val Hoyle, who, you know, has taken some really poor stances on timber. And so we have work to do to show them that they can have a spine and a backbone on issues like that. But anyway, that's another conversation.
Before we move on, I will say one of the big challenges that we have on the West is that the timber industry is successfully using this narrative of we have to log the forests to make them more fire resilient, to push for a lot more logging. And I know that our allies down in California, who are fighting two new proposed pellet manufacturing and export plants, that's the biggest argument that they're running into. It's like, oh, California forests are burning, and so we have to cut them down. And in order to cut them down, we need to expand the timber market, and thus we need to have biomass plants. Mm-hmm. And we haven't heard that as much up here, but I really think that that's motivating a lot of these federal politicians who feel like they just have to do something about fire. They're like, we don't know what to do. And the timber industry is saying cutting down the forest keeps it from burning. And so I guess we have to support biomass. So that is a thing that I think is a uniquely West Coast phenomenon, even though I know that the Southeast is having a few more fires too now. But that's definitely a piece of this that we need to disentangle and just continue to push back on that narrative around using fear of fire to justify massive increases in logging.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely a recurring theme in this show and a lot of the conversations I have. So that's a really good point. Thanks for bringing that up. Unless you all have more to say on this piece, I wanted to move us to the state of biomass campaigns across the country and how listeners can get involved. And I wanted to start with, I know there's some recent victories that you all have had in the Southeast, in Georgia and Mississippi. This might just be a time, Dr. Geer, for you to talk a little bit about the Dogwood Alliance in general as it relates to this project and kind of the landscape of what you all are working on.
Okay. Well, Dogwood Alliance is an environmental nonprofit that has existed for over 28 years. And we stand with the forest to keep the forest standing, but we also stand with the faces behind that forest. Oftentimes, communities, environmental justice communities, those that are people of color, indigenous folks, people who are living in poverty, those communities that we help lift their voices, help them organize around the issue and see what do you want to do and help provide them with resources and support. So quite a few of our communities that we work with, communities in North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, and working our way in Louisiana. However, one of our communities that we've worked with for the past 4 years or so since 2021, Gloucester, Mississippi, which is like, it's a major situation. We knew that if nothing happened for Gloucester, nothing can happen for many other communities because of the dire situation there. They, as Brenna stated earlier, the plant is right there in the middle of the community. The community is like only a little over 800 people, almost 900 folks, sitting there, typically in their backyard, blowing sawdust snow that they can see, you know, in the air, to the point of that's just a minor depiction of what else is in those, in the air. This Drax, that plant that's been there, has over emitted multiple times since they've been there, which overall the company itself and all their plants have had over 11,000 violations within the past, 5 to 10 years. So they've been fighting a long time. Just like she mentioned about Dr. Martin's mother, I've watched her get sick from the time I met her in 2022. She's not the same lady. People that I saw back then in 2022 are now sick. They're on oxygen. So a major victory came for them. So all their outcries and us making sure we keep their story alive in the media. On April 8th, they went for a hearing. Drax had requested a Title V permit, which would allow them to legally emit the amounts of pollutants they were over emitting. So instead of, hey, you're going to get a, let's change the speed limit. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going too fast. Like, the speed limit is 70. And so then you say, well, okay, you gave me, no, I don't give me that ticket. Just give me a license that I can drive 80 and be legal. And so that's typically what they were asking for.
Wow.
Yeah. So lots of advocacy went in that in the front end. The residents showed up at the hearing for Mississippi Department of Environmental Quality, their permit board. And it was wonderful that the permit, for the first time this has happened in history with MDEQ, it was denied. The expansion permit was denied. And that was an amazing win, because this company had been violating their permit and had not been fined appropriately. They had, for years. And so that was a major win, not just for Gloucester, but for every impact that Wood Pellet community throughout the South.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're still excited about that. And that was on April 8th. Yeah.
Congratulations. Could you talk a little bit more about how that can have maybe a ripple effect in your organizing and then some of the other campaigns around biomass that you all are engaged in?
First of all, it gives hope.
Mm-hmm.
And this race and this advocacy, the fight is not, it's a marathon. It takes time, because we have state agencies that hold the power to control these entities, these industries, but mostly will allow these permits and allow the over emission. They're oftentimes in support of these industries. So even when they find them, if they find them little small amounts, this industry is making $1 million per day or so in subsidies alone. So a little $50,000 fine means nothing.
Right.
It's nothing. So it sounds the alarm that this industry is not invincible. It also sends a sign to agencies, state agencies, that yes, you can deny a permit. Yes, you should deny a permit. You need to pay attention to what the industry is doing to the community. And it bolsters other communities who are still waiting on justice in North Carolina and in other places, in Georgia, who still have a fight that's active and going on and will consistently be as long as that industry is in their community.
Mm-hmm. And then something specific about Gloucester that helps us here in the Northwest is that, the main permit that the Drax plant needs in order to get the green light to build in Longview is its air pollution permit. And in their first filing for it with the Southwest Washington Clean Air Agency, they pointed to Gloucester as their example. They're like, we're basing our permit on Gloucester. Mm. And we're like, oh, hey, we've heard about Gloucester. And so, there was an immense pushback. That was last spring. And then in March, just before the hearing on it, that draft permit got pulled. And then since then, every time that Mississippi Gloucester plant violates its air pollution permit, people have been pinging the Southwest Clean Air Agency. Oh, look, Drax is doing it again. They're violating their permit again. Oh, they're violating their permit again. And this just shows, like, they can't comply with the low amounts of pollution that they say they're going to in the permit. They're just like, it's just impossible for them. And them saying, they basically said as much, is what I understand in Mississippi. They're like, oh, we can't comply. We need a bigger, you know, we need a bigger permit. And so that's really helpful information for those of us here who are fighting this plant. Because, you know, A, it shows just like how polluting this industry is. And B, it also shows that the Clean Air agencies can't say no.
Yeah.
They can be like, no, we're gonna protect the quality of the air in our community. So I think that that's helpful. It's helpful in many ways, just to speak a little bit more truth about how bad it is to have this agency come to your town. I mean, this industry. I will say, though, I mean, Drax is still there, still polluting. So it's like a victory, you know, it's like this small victory, but this whole industry just needs to be shut down. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's such a false climate solution. I mean, it just really is. And it's gaining traction. It's like the opposite is happening. It's massively grown in the past decade. And in large part because of this, you know, we've talked a little bit about federal subsidies, and they're getting subsidies because it is on the books carbon neutral. Mm-hmm. Like on paper, it says burning massive amounts of wood for energy generation does not increase carbon emissions. And that's just wrong. It's just not true. It's mm-hmm. more emissions than coal. And but since it's on paper, a lot of countries are looking at that to meet their decreased emissions standards. So it's kind of crazy making once I really learned about this. I was like, this is how we're trying to, you know, solve climate change, by cutting down trees that store carbon better than almost anything, and then almost immediately emitting that carbon into the atmosphere and calling it a solution.
Exactly. And pollution anywhere is pollution everywhere. And the big issues that you think that you can isolate, even the cutting of the forest in the southeastern United States too, even in on the West Coast, and then burning those trees overseas in the UK and Asia, that we're not also just hurting our environment and hurting our climate. Because I'm saying during Hurricane Helene that we had come through this area, the southeastern area of Georgia was rough. Millions of acres of trees were destroyed mm-hmm. in that process. But it was in direct relationship to what we're doing, cutting our forests down. You can't have it both ways. You're going to get the destruction one way or the other, whether it's polluted air, whether it's horrible storms. And we get tough storms down here. We've gotten hurricanes back to back for the past 2 years. And this last one was super destructive. So that's the price we pay for believing the lie mm-hmm. and allowing these industries like Drax and Viva and no name industries that no one's ever heard of, that are just, we have wood pellet plants that just pop up places and they don't have a Drax name or Enviva, and nobody's paying attention because they don't have a big name.
We'll do this again at the end, but now would be a good time to plug to listeners where people can go to learn more and get involved with some of this stuff.
There's actually a brand new website, nobigbiomasspnw.org, that focuses on the two proposed biomass manufacture and export facilities in Washington state. There's one in Longview and in Hoquiam. And so that is a place where people can go and find out what's going on with both of those plants. Again, that's nobigbiomasspnw.org. And then 350 PDX, the organization that I work with, has a website that we created last year when Drax was first coming to town, 350pdx.org/axe-Drax. And that talks a lot about Drax as a company and, you know, all the reasons why we don't want them to come to town, and also connects with more actions that people can take. I mean, right now it is a little bit of a waiting game, a waiting and education game, because we've successfully held off the Longview plant, and the Hoquiam plant is in a lawsuit right now about its clean air permit. I know that the Natural Resource Defense Council, NRDC, is doing a lot of good work around biomass generally, and is also focused on those export plants in Northern California. So NRDC is a great resource to learn more about biomass and what's going on in California.
You pretty much covered the list, Brenna. So, you know, lastly, definitely dogwoodalliance.org and Biofuel Watch. That website has a great deal of information about just the international work and just across the multiple countries about the issue of biomass. Those are good places to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dogwood Alliance and collaborated with people to make a movie called Burned, Are Trees the New Coal? And we've been showing that around the Northwest. I know they're planning on doing another showing in Southwest Washington, but it's also something that you can just stream online. And it's a fantastic entry point to understanding the impacts of this industry and the global politics behind it.
That's it for this episode of Coast Range Radio. As I mentioned at the top of the show, you can hear the rest of this interview where we get into updates on federal policy and legislation, lessons we can learn from multiracial environmental justice organizing in the South, and why calling Senator Ron Wyden is such an important thing that you can do right now for our forests. And you can find that by searching for Coast Range Radio on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other podcast app. You can also follow us on Instagram if you're into that kind of thing. And my email is coastrangeradio@gmail.com. Please reach out anytime with questions, feedback, or just to say hi. Thank you so much for listening to Coast Range Radio. We'll be back next week.
Hi, this is Ray Lynn, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Camp is in session.